So it's great to chit-chat with you, TJ. Talking about really cool stuff again.
Yeah.
We're back.
It's been a while since
we... How have you been?
I've been good. How about yourself?
Pretty good. Pretty good. Busy. You know how it gets. And like you said, it has been a while. Yeah. But it's great to be back, and I'm excited about this show, that we have a new show we're going to offer to everyone, and this is about a book. This one is. It's a friend of mine, somebody I've known for many, many years. His name is Al Moore. He's a wonderful writer, and he has written a book about his journey and his travels. And as a matter of fact, I think you'll enjoy having Al on with us too, TJ. So TJ and Al, I'd like to introduce you to each other.
Hi, TJ.
How you doing, Al?
I'm doing well.
Where are you located? Where are you at right now?
Okay.
At the present time, I'm in Western Maryland.
Oh, okay.
A couple hours south of Joy.
That's right. Not far at all. And Al, you wrote this book. It's called Following Spring.
Yes, it's a story. It's a short story, technically. It actually starts several years ago, when I was first contemplating leaving Santa Fe, where I had called home for 19 years and was really settled in there. So the journey really starts at that point and goes through the actual leaving and all of the things that I experienced along the way.
Well, I have been going through and reading the book, and I've known you for a little while, obviously, and as I've been reading the book, I have to tell you, I've been really struck by the honesty and the heart that you wrote this. As you're reading it, you can see how deeply you go into your heart, and it's just beautiful. It's just beautiful. The other thing that struck me was how as you're going along, the way you're engaging with people, whether you know them or not, and the lessons you take from them or the reminders that are so important in life, they're really, really deep wisdoms. The other thing I wanted to say, too, was I know you're an architect, and we'll get into the book in a minute, but the listeners don't know a whole lot about you, but there are things in here about you being an architect, and I'm just wondering how your traveling is affecting that. Are you connecting with people in that, too, or what's going on with that? Is that on hold?
That's a very good question, Joy, because I'm not sure I have an answer other than to say that for some time I had been feeling a disenchantment with the practice of, with my practice of architecture and the practice of architecture in general. As a kind of an introduction, while I have designed many buildings and I've had a staff of 20 people at one time and a very booming business, I have questioned for myself how I want to practice, if I practice that at all. And that questioning has been going on for some time, and largely it's an interior thinking process or wondering or you know, I'm now 66 years old, and I've had a good run at practicing architecture, and I have a specialty in designing cities. My specialty is called urban design, and I specialize in urban design for small cities in America. So helping them with economic development and things like that. But my architectural practice has been old public buildings like town halls and police stations and fire stations and community centers and things like libraries, things like that.
Mm. Now, you're also the architect for SOSA support systems, aren't you?
Well, I have been, let's call it I have been an advisor. I cannot claim to be the architect, but at this point in the early stages of the planning and visioning process for the project in the Soul Support Systems project in North Carolina, I have been advising because of my background.
Okay. All right. Well, that's good to know. I just learned something. I naturally thought because of being an architect, you were helping with the design of the center in North Carolina for them, but for Soul Support Systems. But so that's interesting to hear that. And now you're at this phase in your life where you, like you said, you're going within and you're traveling while you're doing all that, right?
Yes. Go ahead.
I just wanted to say, I noticed in the book you mentioned that roughly every 20 years you felt like you had to hit the road. You had to have some travel thing. You're kind of itinerant, aren't you?
Well, for short periods of time, yes. I've done a lot of review of my life, and I'm a natural pattern observer, not only patterns of buildings and cities and all of that, but patterns within patterns of my life, and find that I find the pattern language study very helpful to others, and that's one of the reasons I've taken to writing, which is to share those patterns so that perhaps other people can grow internally from hearing about my patterns and recognize them in their own lives.
Yeah, I have to say, too, and you really are a very, very good writer in the sense, too, where I can read here and see where you can hit such a wide range of people. Your style is down to earth. It's heartful. It's beautiful. And the stories, like I said, I know it's one story, but as I'm reading the pages, there's like little stories in each one that have some beautiful wisdom. TJ, is there something you'd like to say here?
No, just keep going. Go ahead. You're good on that. Go ahead, Joy.
I'm good on that, hogging the floor, huh?
No, go ahead.
Okay. But yeah, I like I said, I've been noticing little stories in each page that have some really profound effects. So what was it that made you decide to go on this last excursion? What was the thing that set you trailblazing again this time?
My friends were in Santa Fe, and other friends will attest to the fact that I've never lived anywhere for 20 years before. There's something in my DNA, I think, that has me question my reality and question my place in physical reality, and gets the juices flowing, in a sense, to travel or to change my life in some way, to grow internally in some way. And I talk early in this story about the fact that always preceding these changes is some kind of inner conflict. And I had gotten to the point where I was really appreciating the fact that I had probably the best friends I've ever had in my life in Santa Fe. And not only that, but I had a massage therapist, an acupuncturist or a chiropractor, or these other healing modality people that I had worked with for 19 years, plus the fact that I had a wonderful place to live. I had an art studio and wood shop, and I could design, build, and write, and do all of the creative things that I just absolutely love to do. And I had all of that in Santa Fe. And yet, conflict came in where there were things about the city and about the state, actually, that you'll know the meaning of when I say I got tweaked by some of the things. And I'll come back to that in a minute. But when I started feeling the conflict between having all these wonderful friends and having a great place to live and a studio to do my work and all these people who kept my mind and body and heart and soul, you know, running at top performance kind of thing. My consciousness was always expanding. So I had all these folks, and I started to wonder, well, you know, if I'm being called to leave Santa Fe, then who am I without, who am I if I'm not an architect? Who am I without all these friends? Can I survive back in what you might call the outside world? So those kinds of conflicts were going on in my own thinking process. The things that kind of tweaked me, or I use the term I found exasperating, was a focus on history. Now, Joy, you know me pretty well, and My orientation is toward the future. And I know that, you know, from our study of principles, I know that the future is created moment by moment by moment by moment, each continuous evolving moment. And it's how we're being in a moment that will direct us toward whatever future. So an example might be, if I'm behaving from the essence of my being, which I describe as tenderness and compassion, are the qualities of my essence. If I'm behaving like that, then I'm going to create, I'm living from that essence, and I'm going to create a sustainable future for myself, a very positive future. But if I'm living inconsistent with that essence of myself, I create futures that I would rather not have. You know, and I believe I have a choice with futures, which future. And it frustrated me because I love Santa Fe. It's a wonderful place. And like I said, I had wonderful friends there. What was exasperating to me was its focus on its history, and its history defined the city and the state. And for me, I found that exasperating. And I did not feel that my voice was being heard on one hand about how to make changes there, because I've been in influential places there. But I felt like my voice was not being heard, or another way to look at that is that I was not able to find the vibration in my discussions with them that would have them have the powers that be in the city make the changes that would produce an outcome that they were looking for. So just, you know, in a sense, just like any of us as individuals, whole cities or whole communities can be narcissistic. They can be so infatuated with themselves that there's nothing they can do to change or improve, or nothing that they can do to benefit from. And as somebody who is kind of a born change agent like me, and sincerely wants to assist others to grow, and cities to grow, I found it exasperating, especially when, as you well know, Joy, the universe tends to kick us in the butt when it's time for us to change something that is no longer serving us. So being in the business that I was in and in the place that I was in, I decided that despite the fact that I had all these wonderful friends and a wonderful place to be, an environment that was just exquisite, I just had to change. I had to leave. And so it was really a several-year process for me to finally decide. And one day, I can tell you that it was the 27th. It was a Friday morning of the 27th of February of 2015. I woke up with crystal clarity that I had to leave, that it was time. It's time to go. So, you know, when you get that kind of clarity about your life or about something, it's time to take action. Yep. So I took care of business, and the thing that I was actually most proud of is the fact that I sold things. I sold stuff. I sold furniture and equipment from my shop and things that I no longer needed, and pared my belongings down to the point where everything I own, all the things I had, all fit in a 10 by 15 storage unit. And that felt like an accomplishment, and I felt as free in the moment of that realization as I did when I was 25 years old, and the only things that were missing from that time period for me were my full beard, my long hair, shoulder-length hair, and my 1964 Volkswagen bus. So basically, once I decided that, once I had that awareness, I just made arrangements and was committed to leaving. And so then, as I was traveling, I realized that, again, looking at patterns, was that there were all these conflicts. I would see paradoxes or questions, like with the people I encountered. The first person that I encountered was my cousin in Georgetown, Texas. And, there I went to see my cousin and her husband. And there I got clarity on things that about places that I could live, where I thought I'd want to be. And I also had a wonderful encounter. My cousin, Ellie, is my father's brother's daughter, first daughter. And my father had another brother, and he and his wife lived near my cousin, Ellie, in Georgetown, in a retirement community. And I had a wonderful visit with him. It was so really wonderful, and it was confirming for me that the stories I have in my life and of my life can be healing to others.
Mm-hmm.
So, for instance, I had only met this uncle that I met in Georgetown, Texas. I had only met him once before in my life. And I'd never heard much about this man other than my mother nagging my father to call his brothers. My father would ignore her.
Sorry, was this Uncle Tom?
His name is Uncle Pat. And, my father was Albert. And my father was Albert. He was the oldest of the sons. Then there was Ellie's father, who was Jim or James. And then there was a third son named Pat. And he's one that I did not know until I had met him the first time about 15 years ago in Santa Fe. And then I met him again, because he lives near Ellie and her husband Tom, and surprise, surprise! On Saturday morning, when I'm getting a tour of Georgetown, and the community, and the community that they live in. We stop at Pat's house, and it's wonderful for me. And then we decide to go out and have lunch. And Ellie and I and Pat are sharing stories of our family and all of that, which is a very rare occasion about my father's side, because my father was very secretive or very closed about his family. I never knew exactly what it was, but he never told us about his family, so I knew very little about my uncles and knew very little about my grandparents and their lives and my father's childhood and all that kind of thing. So at any rate, I'm having lunch with Ellie and Pat, and we're sharing stories. And Pat told me about his experience as a young person with Albert, who was my dad. And he described something, the way that my father was kind of dismissive of him, and I said, you know, my dad never went to any of my graduations except my graduation from Columbia University, where I got my master's degree. He never went to any of my football, baseball, or basketball games in high school or college, and would consistently find me at fault for anything that went wrong, you know? And that was kind of my experience of my dad. And when my Uncle Pat heard that story, there was almost like a twinkle in his eyes. You know, when the moisture gets there just before a tear falls.
Sure.
And you can see the sparkles, you know, you can see the eyes sparkling, and you know they're about ready to have an emotional breakthrough of some sort.
Yeah.
And a release of the tension that they might have held for their entire lives. So that was a really wonderful early experience in my month of travel from Santa Fe to Maryland, that really reinforced for me and gave me more motivation to write more stories.
Yeah.
So that particularly other men, will perhaps garner some ability to look at their lives in a different way, to let go, to let go of emotional baggage that's weighing their current lives down and inhibiting their creating the lives that they really want to have. So in a lot of ways, that's my motivation for writing these stories.
That makes sense. But I wanted to tell you that this book isn't like, or that your short story isn't just going to touch men. It's also going to touch women, speaking as one, okay?
Yeah.
Because there is such heart and honesty in it, really. It's really very touching. And I just wanted to comment on the experience you had where you told your story about your dad with your cousin, and there was a tear in his eye and the whole thing. Well, you know, you bridged the idea for him that it wasn't, your dad didn't just fluff him off. It was just his issue. You know, you took it from, it went from his experience to being, oh, that's just how his dad is. And he did that to his son. So he did that with people, you know?
Yes.
So I think you brought him peace.
the other thing about it, too, is that what I think the central component is here is compassion.
Is that
when you realize that my father behaved toward me and others the way he did because there was some deep emotional wound that he never was able to let go of.
Absolutely. And it was about him. It wasn't about you guys, which is part of the healing, too. And, you know, so I think that that's a really important piece. And the other thing I'm struck by is you left Santa Fe, right, because it was stuck in its history. And here you are in your travels making peace with your history, right? So my question is, have you made peace with Santa Fe?
Yes, as a matter of fact, I knew that I could not leave Santa Fe without first making peace. I'm sure you've heard that adage, wherever you go, there I am.
Yep.
It's like, well, you know, I have to ask myself, do I want to take the anger and resentment I feel with me to the next place?
Mm-hmm.
And the answer to that was, hell no, I don't want to do that. I don't want to repeat. I don't want to repeat living in my own woundedness in a new place, because in my own mind, I'll destroy whatever benefits I've garnered from the new place. So I know enough, whether I'm in a relationship with someone or, you know, it's simply a situation within myself. I know that if I don't come to peace with that place or that person, and I have my practices for being able to do that, if I don't make those changes internally, well, let me rephrase that. When I make those changes internally, my external world changes dramatically to the point where I really enjoy the results.
Yes.
And at this point in my life, I've had enough of having results in my life that I would have preferred not to have. So, in a sense, the practices I have are set up so that I can continually heal, whatever word you want to use, dissipate those, let's say, angry or disturbed, conditioned responses or reactions within me, so that I can move on and grow and really appreciate my life more and more and more, and enjoy it.
Absolutely. So, TJ.
Yes, ma'am.
Is there something you wanted to say here?
Yeah, I'm sorry, because I had people constantly coming in asking me questions while we're doing this interview, so I had to bring my mic down, and because I'm at work as well, so I apologize. But that's their job. They're just coming in, so I hope you don't mind, Al, and enjoy. When you were talking earlier about what I caught when you said the moment by moments leading to other moments. And I really love the direction where this is going, because we're creating our own future. We're creating our own world, and we have to stay focused, don't we, Al? We have to stay focused. If we just hang on to that and let go of so many things and stay focused, we can continue to create better things for ourselves. And we have to be aware of that, don't we?
Well, the word I use is diligence. It takes focus and diligence to stay focused in each present moment and to treasure those moments so that the future, our future, our individual and collective future, will be peaceful and enjoyable, and we can look forward to, you know, each next moment because we've lived consciously in the first moment. The method that I have used to practice this when I want to is I will listen to a piece of music that I particularly like. And there's one particular one that I really enjoy, and this really helps me. There is a 19th and early 20th century piece of music called J'aime no perdu. Do either of you know of it?
No.
Haven't heard of it.
It's by Erik Satie, and it's a piano piece. I am not an expert by any stretch of the imagination of classical music, but this is one of the pieces that I absolutely love because the notes are spread out. There's space between the notes. And if you look at the note like a moment in time of your life, and you can be present for each note, each distinct note, in listening to that music, I practice being present in each individual moment. Does that make sense?
Yeah, mm-hmm. That really does.
So there are things like that. When I find myself drifting into the past or into the future, which is really where I go very easily, And I'll find myself being critical of something I've done in the past, or enraged, or, you know, some kind of thought-feeling process about the past. Something in my training now triggers, or something is really my my diligence at catching myself. Oh, that was a thought about the past. It's over. It's done with. There's nothing you can do about it. You can only change it in the present moment by changing your own thoughts and feelings, and that will create new outcomes. So when I get lost in the past, I'll go over and get a CD by Erik Satie, and I'll put on J'aime no perdu, and I'll listen to it, and it brings me and I right to each moment by listening to all the distinctly individual notes.
I think that's a beautiful, soulful practice to come back to the present. And what a great way to connect with heaven on earth while you're doing it vibrationally. Really.
Yeah.
That's pretty amazing. Yeah. Because really, the things that call us to the present are the things that are heavenly, usually. because that's what we want to bring. Yeah, so I think that's lovely.
Another quick story about my travels I was feeling kind of funky about encountering Galveston, Galveston, Texas, where I spent a lot of time as a child. I had spent time there. excuse me. And as an urban designer and architect, I was kind of pissing and moaning about the fact that what I was seeing in Galveston was all fast food restaurants and lots of little stores around on the main street, and it was all about the tourism, and just I was just kind of pissy about that. So I realized that what I was doing is I was making my own life miserable by getting caught up in criticizing this place. So I did some inner work and shifted that shifted that attitude. And then I have, I decide I very rarely eat junk food, but I decided, what the heck, I would go to Waffle House for breakfast. And I had breakfast there, and I'm sitting at the counter, and this man comes and sits next to me, and he's from out of town too, and I find out that he's a retired rancher from Kansas, and that he and his wife come to Galveston to get away from the heat and the dust and all that kind of stuff in Kansas. So we have this very short conversation, and I asked him what it was like, what it was about ranching that he enjoyed, and he said to me very concisely, "It's very hard work, but it's very satisfying work." And that was kind of, that kind of brought me back to that adage that I remembered from a long time ago, a good cowboy never passes up an opportunity to shut up. And in other words, say your piece, but be quiet. At any rate, I asked him if he was...
I never heard that. That's good.
Yeah, a good cowboy never misses an opportunity to shut up. So I asked him if he was glad that he had been a rancher, and he said, wouldn't have done anything else. And my last words were to him, and my last thoughts were that a man can't ask for much more of his life than to do something that is satisfying to his heart. And this short piece of my travels ended up going about an hour north and seeing another cousin of mine and having dinner with them and with him and his wife. And on the way back to their home, he takes me through Galveston and finds the hotel that I had looked for earlier in the day, where my parents had been married in 1947. And part of my dissatisfaction with Galveston was that I couldn't find that place, and that I didn't see a city like I wanted to see. And my cousin took me through old downtown Galveston, which was exactly what I was looking for. And, you know, it was kind of like, well, that'll teach me to jump to conclusions, rash conclusions that there's nothing here for me. And so all through this trip, there were all kinds of experiences that, let's say, questioned questioned my tendency to jump to rash conclusions or to judge something. And I've gotten to the point in my life where I really enjoy the fact that the universe has a very good sense of humor and will constantly show me the error of my ways. And show me where I have these thoughts and tendencies to separate, to criticize or to separate from others or places or whatever, whether that separation is, oh, I'm better than that, or, oh, God, they're better than me, or those are all aspects of separation that we have, each human being has felt or experienced. But what I really enjoy is how the universe shows me the error of that thinking.
Yeah, it's amazing, isn't it? All of a sudden, you got a mirror sitting in front of you.
and each person and place is holding up that mirror, and if you're diligent, yeah, and consistently diligent and practice looking at the results in our lives and saying, is that what I really want to experience? And then realizing that, oh, if I'm going to change that external experience, then I need to make adjustments to my thoughts and feelings so that the results will be more satisfying.
Yes, I hear you.
And I really love it when that kind of magic happens.
Yeah, it's like you know you're working on you and the outside world is working.
Yeah. And continually throughout this trip, those kinds of experiences happened. You had earlier mentioned my experience in the gas station in Louisiana.
Mm-hmm.
Where, you know, I came upon some people who were obviously their economic circumstances were obviously more challenging than my own. Their clothes, their health, their manner of speech, the fellow I encountered at the station, who was trying to pay for the merchandise that he was selecting, but you could tell by the fact that he was having great difficulty counting out the wad of bills and change that he pulled out of his pockets. And you know, and I'm standing kind of off to his side. He looks at me and kind of scowls, and I wonder is he judging me? Is he judging me because I have clean clothes and a fresh shave and all of that? And because we look entirely different.
Mm-hmm.
And I just go to these thoughts immediately. It took me, you know, was he judging me? And then I started to think, well, what is this man's life like? What does he do well? What does he enjoy? What does he love? What are the gifts that he has? What does he value? And the thing that I keep going back to is, does he know that we share a common origin, and that because we've come from that common origin, nothing can ever really separate us? And so I would find myself thinking about things like this a lot during this trip with people I encountered. And I would pull off the road and think about it and write notes about it because I thought maybe sometime I would write a story about this adventure and the incredible characters. And, you know, thoughts about, like, isn't it absolutely incredible the way Creator shows up in all of these people, the incredible variation. No two of us is alike in our thoughts and feelings and all. We have similarities. But, you know, what thinking like that did for me was it really diminished judgments and elitisms or arrogance that I can get into and produce undesirable results from those qualities, so that being diligent about these thoughts of, you know, how is this other person's life and how is the Creator expressing through that person? What is the meaning of our encounter? That keeps me on my toes. And by that I mean diligent in these practices of experiences of union.
Yes.
Incredible gratitude for encountering this man.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Because he got me to look at myself and the ways that I separate and the results that I get, the undesirable results that I get when I exhibit qualities of separation.
So he was a teacher.
Very much so.
Mm-hmm.
Very much so.
Yes.
And to dismiss anyone,
mm-hmm.
it behooves us never to diminish cast dispersions on anyone that we encounter,
mm-hmm.
because they're holding up a mirror for us.
Yes.
And And by paying attention to that, by being diligent about looking in the mirror, we can, what I call, have dominion over our own lives by having dominion. And by dominion, I mean rulership, mastery over our own thoughts and feelings in each moment that will create the life that we aspire to have.
That's right. The road to mastery is an inside job. Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yes. Now, I know we're going to have to stop it soon, but there's something I want to address. I found something in your book that I just loved, and what I would like to do is just read this, because I have a question for you. Okay?
Uh-huh.
It says here, I am blessed with three younger sisters, Martha, Catherine Elizabeth, and Mary Margaret. They were all born and named after my father's conversion to Catholicism. In the early 50s, my dad had been saved by God himself from the clutches of the angel of death when the rear half of his car was sheared off by a tractor-trailer truck. This had him sometimes behave like a religious zealot. At one point, he offered to sacrifice me, his firstborn, to the priesthood. After that institution rejected me, thank you, baby Jesus, I'm certain he did the next best thing he could think of to praise the Lord for saving him. He named all my sisters in homage to his Savior's holy family. I jokingly refer to my siblings as my biblical sisters. Unlike their biblical namesakes, however, they've each done their best to cast self-doubt, to cast doubt on their own holiness. I applaud them profoundly for their irreverence. I love this. This is perfect. The question I have for you, what did you do that made the institution reject you, Al?
Oh.
What happened?
Well, actually, you know the story, Joy.
I do. Well, you know, our listeners don't.
In the my father really wanted to do something for God for saving me, but so he marched me into the Monsignor one time. He pulled me off the baseball field and marched me into Monsignor one day and said, I want to know if my son can be a priest. And he said to me, show the Monsignor your hands. And I was born, I have out of 10 fingers, I have 4 that are what are called normal, and I really only have 9. And the others are deformed. And in the 1950s, the Catholic Church, based on my understanding, had a canon, which is a church law, as opposed to a God's law, that indicated that in order to be a priest, your hands had to be, quote-unquote, normal in order to raise the host during communion when the priest is blessing the host and the wine. And so since my hands are not normal, I was not accepted as a priesthood candidate, and I didn't want to be a priest.
No,
who wanted to become priests, but I had no interest in it whatsoever.
Well, thank you, baby Jesus.
Thank you, baby Jesus. Yes.
Yes.
So, And you, anyway, you know, yeah, go ahead.
I wanted to say too, and who the hell's to say what's normal? You know, it's like that can't be defined by a religion, an institution, or anything. And you know, the Catholic Church lost out, but the baby Jesus saved you, so you're good.
Yeah, he must have been looking out after me, too. He saved me from my father's jealous.
That's probably what happened. Yep, absolutely. I can't believe your dad, though, with this whole thing, though. He was something, you know. It's amazing, though, Al, because what you've done with your life, you know, is you have pulled the excellence in ways that, you know, it came from your heart and your soul and had nothing to do with what anyone outside of you defined. So, nice job, bro.
Thanks. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Yes. So, TJ, are you there? Are they calling you at work?
No. I just wanted to say my comment to what Al said. It's funny how he feels he has a divine experience and he wants to make you live up to it as opposed to himself. Why doesn't he become a priest if, you know, I want to make my son do it for me, you know?
Well, by that time he was married and had kids.
Oh, okay.
Of course,
yeah,
you know,
I guess not.
He couldn't be it. So, okay, so I'll sacrifice my son. It's like who was it in the Bible who was going to sacrifice his son?
Abraham.
Yeah, with the altar.
Abraham.
Yeah. Yeah, well, thank God it wasn't biblical times. That's
right.
All
yeah,
I have
you
to
might have
say.
Been you might have been sacrificed another way.
Yeah, right. Mm-hmm. So, life is pretty funny, and I'm finally getting the message.
Yes, you know,
God has a great sense of humor.
I think so.
Yes, indeedy. And so do you. Both of you.
Go ahead, Joy. I'm sorry.
Sure. I know we're going to have to close, but I wanted to see if there was something specific that you really felt you wanted to share with everyone before we do, because I know our time is kind of up. But, I just wanted to check in.
Yeah, there is. I start and end this story with two quotes. The first from Mark Twain that says, "Travel is fatal to prejudice, bigotry, and narrow-mindedness, and many people need it sorely on these accounts. Broad, wholesome, charitable views of men and things cannot be acquired by vegetating in one little corner of the earth all one's life."
Yes.
And I felt that was very much what this journey started out as. And then I end this story with a quote from Heraclitus. That is, good character is not formed in a week or a month. It is created little by little, day by day. Protracted and patient effort is needed to develop good character. A man's character is his fate.
Wow. Beautiful. What a great way to end a book, and what a powerful message. So, Al, thank you for coming on and being on the show. It was a
thank
fun
you guys.
To have you.
It was fun.
Yeah.
It was very fun.
Good. And maybe when the next book is done, you'll come back?
Yeah, I'd love to. Actually, I got some inspiration this morning.
Oh, great. Thank You're you. On it.
Yeah.
Yay.
Yeah.
Yeah. TJ, is there anything you wanted to add?
No, I just want to thank you, Al. Thank you for sharing that. Obviously, you're a very masterful storyteller. And I love hearing those kind of things. And I used to know a lot of people like that, you know. And I'm kind of like that, too, observing others and hearing and seeing the bigger picture. You know, and while you're doing this, you know, I'm kind of going through some of that right now here at work. We have new owners. I mean, we're excited, but there's a lot of chaos. And I'm seeing myself stepping back, and everybody else is kind of going, oh, my goodness, oh, my goodness, oh, my goodness. And I'm watching them, and I'm just doing it with grace and compassion, and I'm not caught up in a lot of it like they are right now. So your stories are kind of reflecting what I'm going through here a little bit at work right now. Thank you.
Well, the way I look at it is chaos is order yet to be recognized.
Yeah.
And what it takes to see the order is stepping back and getting a larger perspective. Include more in what you're looking at. And that will increase the order that you feel, the balance that you feel inside yourself, and that's the place at which you can create the reality that you want.
That's well said. Thank you, Al.
You're welcome.
Yes.
Thank you, guys.
You're welcome.
Take care.
Thanks again.
Okay.
TJ,
bye-bye.
Thank you for everything.
You're welcome. Yeah.
All right. Bye-bye. And I want to thank our listeners, and stay tuned. We'll be running a rerun, a favorite one, and then next month we're going to have a teacher who works with Dragon Medicine, Linda Applegate, is going to come and share her wisdoms with us, if all goes according to schedule. Okay, everyone, many blessings.
Bye-bye.
Bye.